Hail and well met. Welcome to another edition of Self Evident. My name is Jenna, and with me today is
Alyssa
and Kenna Rose.
And today we have a very, very special guest with us. Dr. Carl Benzio is a co-founder of the Honey Lake Clinic in Florida. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep.
And we are super excited to pick his brain and glean from his wisdom today about a few different topics. The first question I would love to ask you, Honey Lake Clinic, what makes it unique from the other clinics that are up and running?
Well, yeah, Honey Lake Clinic is such a unique, interesting place. First of all, you know, the listeners go to the website, you'll see that we are a psychiatric residential treatment facility, but we are on the grounds of a very relaxing, almost plantation-like pastoral situation that just was a hunting fishing resort, destination wedding place, wooded lakes. It's just such a tranquil, relaxing place to even just go on vacation, let alone to go on a healing journey.
Yeah.
So just the setting of it is just really nice and amazing. Then what we do there is we uniquely integrate science and faith. So as a psychiatrist, science is very important to me. God has designed our mind and designed laws into how he designed the whole world to function, from atoms, planets, orbits, down to the itty bitty little atoms and cell membranes, neurotransmitters in our brain, how we think, emotions, how we make decisions. You know, all that is so intricately and finely designed. He has given us such a powerful mind. And thankfully, we've been able to, through science, which is just studying what God designed and learning how he designed it to function, we've discovered a lot about the human mind and why we do what we do, why we make the decisions we make, why we struggle in the areas that we struggle.
Yeah.
So science is really important to me as a psychiatrist. But then also, there's this whole faith side of a relationship with God, Jesus, God's love, his forgiveness, and then his incredible instruction manual, the B-I-B-L-E, the best instruction book for living every day. You know, how do we apply that to our lives? Because that's really the go-to book as to how we should live our lives for abundant living and to avoid the problems in life. So at Honey Lake Clinic, we help people understand who God really is. A lot of times we grow up sort of with a picture of God that isn't quite the accurate picture of God in the Bible.
Yeah.
So we get to really help people understand, well, who is the God of the Bible? And then how do we relate with him, grow our relationship? And, you know, we can have a talking, listening, growing relationship with God. But then he has this instruction manual that he's given us, the Bible, that has these incredible life management instructions and tips all through, whether it's actual instruction like Proverbs and James and Paul's letters and Jesus's parables, or whether it's examples of people's lives. Here's what to do for your life to go well, and here's what not to do, or you're going to have a lot of difficulty and struggles in your life. And so we help people understand how to apply that. So it's about a 30 to 60 day treatment stay for our adolescents, girls.
Okay.
We have about an 85 to 90 day length of stay, so that you're there for a pretty good chunk of time to really connect, learn from your therapist and the treatment team, practice it and apply it, and then be able to go home and really have some great momentum on your healing journey.
That's really neat. So as we were looking through the Honey Lake website, we noticed that there is an adolescent treatment specifically designed for teenage girls between 13 and 17. So why is there a specific focus on adolescent females and not adolescents as a whole?
Yeah, so we would love to be able to treat males as well, but where we are in a very small town in North Florida, we don't have a whole lot of staff, especially male staff, to be able to man a unit for adolescent boys. So even though we would love to do that, just our manpower that's available, we have a lot more females that are available to work in the area that we're at. And I think females are just under a significant attack in our society. So in 2021, there were some stats that came out that study high school seniors, and every 2 years, they do surveys of high school students around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that high school girls double the amount of high school guys have difficulties with depression, feeling overwhelmed, feeling that their mood is interfering with their functioning and their ability to move forward in life over the past month. And they have twice the amount of suicidal thoughts as guys do, twice the amount of suicide attempts, twice the amount of times of needing medical attention as a result of the suicide attempts. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that that we can, you know, dive into. But we would love to treat males. We treat females because of the manpower available, but also I think there's a, you know, a special attack that Satan has on our girls, unfortunately, in our society. And we see it with sexual predators and just the hyper sexualization of our society and looking at women as, you know, we like to think that we're very advanced in our understanding that women are people and they're not property anymore. But unfortunately, in our society, we still have a lot of subliminal messaging that, you know, really undermines a young girl being able to walk in her God-given identity and value that she has.
Yeah, and I would love to get further into that, especially as we're going to be talking about the dating scene later. But Kenna, did you have one more question to go through?
Yes, and I was curious. So, you know, we're talking about Gen Z, which is like kids between 13 and 17. And so I was wondering, have you seen, is Generation Z really suffering with more mental health issues than other generations, or are they just more willing to talk about it?
I think it's a combination. I think that they're certainly much more open to talking about and being honest about their struggles than, you know, my generation certainly was. We were sort of a, you know, the World War II people. I'm not that old. I'm 60 years old. So I was born in 63. But the people that lived through the Depression and World War II, they were sort of a very, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps and, you know, nothing is going to kill us kind of mentality. They were very resilient, very tough. Tough on each other and tough on themselves. And so to reach out for help or to ask for help was something that was a struggle for them, you know, to the detriment at times. My generation is a little bit of a combination of that. We're still on the tougher side. We had those people as parents, so they were a little bit tough on us at times. So, you know, you learn some resiliency, you learn how to buck up, you learn how to manage things. And so you really didn't talk about feelings as much. As we've gotten a little older, we've sort of realized that that's not quite so healthy what our parents did as far as not talking about things. It is important to talk about what's going on inside, you know, this unconscious space that we have deep inside of us. That's really where Satan wants to play a lot with our flesh and all those hidden things that we think that, well, they happened a long time ago. I can just sweep them under the carpet or I can ignore them and they don't really impact me much anymore. But all those past experiences have significant impact on who we are and how we manage things, how we see things now and the decisions that we make. And so I think that the younger generations that we have now have progressively gotten a little bit more open, especially in our Western culture. If you go to Eastern cultures, not very open about talking about things, and in Africa and in Asia, but here in America, we're very open about talking about, you know, depression, anxiety, addictions, substance use, promiscuity, those kind of things. And we would have been in, you know, the 70s, 80s, and 90s talking about
those are very those kind of struggles. Topics.
So I think that there's certainly more openness about talking. I think that, you know, COVID, you know, was a disaster in many respects, and we're now in a behavioral health disaster as a result of COVID. We were in a pandemic before COVID, but now COVID has escalated things. But the one silver lining about COVID is that it was almost everybody struggled. I mean, there wasn't anybody who didn't have some struggle or didn't lose somebody. So it was much more normalized that, hey, there's this disruption, there's this loss, there's this chaos, there's this uncertainty. At the base minimum, let alone some more significant elements for a lot of people. So the normalization of stress and chaos and loss, and then the willingness to talk about it or seek out help, I think is one of the silver linings of COVID. Put on top of that, though, over the last, you know, 30 or 40 years since we've gone into this postmodern era where we don't have truth and we don't have absolutes, and we moved into a much more experiential or feeling-based society, and the people that have grown up, millennials and Gen Zs, you know, in this kind of breeding ground and in mindset, I think there is more uncertainty, there is more anxiety, more fear, less connection less relationship to help sustain them or to practice with or to encourage them. So I think we see an increase in psychiatric struggles, plus we have an increase in them being able to communicate and open up and feel comfortable discussing those things more than past generations have.
So there's kind of a give and take with that where they're more willing to talk about it, but they don't have the community to have those discussions with. Would you say that would be correct?
I would say that we, you know, the Surgeon General of the United States said we are in an epidemic of loneliness.
Yeah.
A number of years ago, there was a term coined crowded loneliness. And, you know, in that age where we started to have a lot of friends, we started to have a lot of contacts on social media. And I got 5,000 on Facebook.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, how many of them are actual friends? Yeah, they're listed as friends. You know, but do we really have friends? Do we really have people that we talk to on a regular basis, have deeper conversations that we feel comfortable face-to-face being vulnerable and transparent? You know, we can be vulnerable and transparent when we're posting a picture or we're making a comment, but actually face-to-face with somebody where we have eye contact and we see the expressions in their face and they see the expressions in our face and they have, you know, are we going to give them leverage into our life and our inner space? And do we feel comfortable sort of bearing down to the foundation? That's what we do at Honey Lake Clinic, is create a community and an opportunity for people. You know, whenever people are living their life, oftentimes their life starts to, you know, it's like a house that they're building, and it starts to teeter and it's almost ready to collapse. It's in danger. And so, you know, a lot of people will make various changes. They'll change the seventh floor carpeting. They'll repaint the fifth floor bathroom. They'll change the, you know, the tile in the third floor kitchen. And this will give temporary stability to their teetering house or life. But in reality, when a house is struggling structurally and in danger of falling and collapsing, we really need to do foundational work. But foundation work doesn't come easy. It takes time, energy, effort, expense, uncertainty. What am I going to find? Am I going to like what I find? We have to have trust. You know, can't bear it down to the foundation on our own. We need to trust, you know, a contractor or a builder or somebody to excavate and to, you know, rip it down for us. So we have to put our trust in somebody's hands to, you know, to do the tearing away. And then we're going to expose, you know, be vulnerable, be transparent. Wow, do I want people to really see that inner being of who I am? And we have a lot of struggles doing that. And I think the last couple of generations have a little bit more difficulty with that process because they don't have as many people to really do that with. Our society has gotten so, you know, people move around a lot. You don't grow up in the same town with the same people, with your cousins, with your aunts, with your uncles, your grandparents, with friends that you've grown up with since, you know, nursery school, third grade, fifth grade, seventh grade. You see each other each other at the grocery store, at the church, at the school, you know, at July 4th celebration in town. Other parents know you, they know your situation, and they can reprimand you or discipline you or say, hey, don't be taking that, you know, kind of thing. And, you know that they'll get back to your mom. Well, today we don't have communities like that. We don't have towns like that. We, you know, we're much more mobile. We're much more agile. We move around the country. We accept jobs in different places. And, you know, now with virtual, you know, work, people don't even go in and have a work community that they can engage with. Yeah, so there's just a lot of isolation in our life and a lot of loneliness as a result of that. We don't get to practice these psychological things are meant for us to do in community. God built us for relationship, and we're to be in relationship to grow, to learn, to practice, to get consoling from, to have a shoulder to cry on, to get encouragement, to get cheerleading. You know, all those happen in relationship. So when we lose that relationship, there's a big void in our life and be in that psychological growth process and resiliency.
Yeah. Right. And what you were saying about relationships and everything, I think that's just such a perfect segue into like the next topic, which is the dating scene. Alyssa and I Alyssa has gotten married, so the dating scene worked very well for her. But so I'm just very interested to hear your thoughts about this. Alyssa, do you want to go through the first question?
Yeah. So kind of back to the importance of community and what you treat adolescent females for at the Honey Lake Clinic and what you're seeing with women being still seen in some ways as property, something to be indulged in. What would you say is your number one red flag for
women to look out for in men? I know you have daughters that are married, and I'm curious from your perspective as a father, what you were looking for as a red flag.
Yeah. So, you know, first of all, you know, me growing up, I wasn't the perfect boyfriend either. So, you know, the guys I hung around with and, you know, the behaviors that I had, it sort of perks my ears up and lets me know, hey, this is what can go through not every guy's mind, but certainly a lot of us struggle with various different aspects in our immaturity and our growing up, wanting to impress our peers and, you know, wanting to get ahead, wanting to have satisfaction immediately. We're not very long-term thinkers, you know, as guys, especially in relationship kind of thing. So I do have three daughters, no boys. So I learned a lot about girls and protecting girls. And as you get a chance to raise them, you know, you invest a lot into them. And, you know, God blessed us with these three daughters. And as the head of the household, gave me a responsibility to protect them, you know, to raise them up in the ways that they should walk, mm-hmm. To love them, to care for them, to help them understand who He is, and then how to teach them, hey, these are the behaviors, these are the skills, these are the ways that you have the abundant life, and don't do these things because these detract from the abundant life. These are have a lot of consequences or hurt for you. So God isn't a God who just doesn't want us to have fun. He designed us and He knows exactly how we can have the most fun. He says, hey, do these things. This will get you the most fun and the most abundance, the most freedom, the most joy. And don't do these things because the way I designed you, these things aren't going to help you get anything that you want in this process or get any joy, peace, freedom, value, purpose, identity, all those cool things that we're, you know, we're striving for and that we desire.
Yeah.
So as I, you know, look at guys, you know, you know, as they're dating my daughters, you know, I look for, well, what is their decision-making? That's my area of expertise at decision-making. You know, what is their track record in decision-making? Are they impulsive in their decision-making? Do they have good emotional regulation? I mean, everybody's going to get angry. Everybody's going to get hurt. Everybody feels lonely at times. Everybody gets amped up. Everybody gets a little anxious. Well, how do they regulate their emotions? Do they let their emotions become their decision makers? Or are they able to regulate, to modulate those emotions, to feel them, but to be able to have control over them? Or do they let their emotions control them? I want to see that they have good self-awareness, that they have a good understanding of, you know, who they really are, mm-hmm. who they aren't, what they would like to be, what they need to do to get to that point. And do they have a plan to make that happen? You know, I like to see guys, I've played a lot of sports. Sports were very helpful to me in developing a lot of skills of self-discipline, self-control, respect for authority, your coaches, your referees, your fellow teammates to work structure. Together as a team. Structure, you got to be, you know, to at this time, you got to be at practice and you got to be able to do your homework to be able to stay eligible to play in the season. So you got to get this work done and you got to juggle some responsibilities with chores to be able to add this extracurricular in. So, you know, whether they be sports, whether they be a work or a job, or whether they're playing an instrument and in the band or their schoolwork, even, you know, are they tending to the little things? I'm a big believer in, you know, if you want to be good at something, you have to practice it to be good at it, right? So if you want to be a good football player, you got to practice being good at football, or being good clarinet player or saxophone player, you got to practice being good at that instrument. Well, in order to be good at things in general, you have to practice being good at things, right? So not even just specific things, but being good at things in general. So whatever you do, try to be good at it, whether it's making your bed, you do things halfway a lot of times thinking, nobody's looking, or that doesn't really matter. Well, those are how you do in those particular little things. Those mm-hmm. are little skills that put together become medium-sized skills and put together become big skills. So I want to see that you have an appreciation for the little. You have attention to detail for the little, that you want to be good at all things, no matter what it is. Because when you're with your kids as an adult and you're playing with your kids, every little moment is an important moment. So you want to be good at every little moment. As a teenager, you think, well, you know, probably about 10% of my day is really important. And the 90% of my day, I can sort of slough or kick back or, you know, just write in or mail in kind of thing. And well, no, every moment is important. Our brain chemistry is affected by every decision we make. And so we want to be good at the little things because that helps us be good at the medium-sized things, which helps us be good at the bigger things. So those are some of the things I'm looking at. How do they respect authority? Okay. And then in their family, do they have some good family connections to show me that they have some relationship skills? They have value relationships and they have an understanding and they've had a chance to work and practice in and engage in relationships.
Right.
Those are all very good things that I don't think many people would think of looking at those specific areas.
But my question is, as a woman who is of age to be in the dating scene and would be looking for somebody eligible, how would I be able to determine all of these factors from a young man? What should I do?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah. So as you're looking, I mean, some of those things, that's what you're, you know, that's what you're looking for. Those kind of, you know, how do they tend to the little things, you know, in their life? Obviously their faith and their spirituality, you know, whenever I, you know, my daughters are looking to date somebody, you know, it was a rule in our house, at least while they were in high school still, if they were going to date somebody, the guy had to come for an interview.
I love that.
That is awesome.
So I had to interview them. And so first of all, what it does is it sets a certain bar for my daughters, right? They're not going to bring any schlep into the house. You know, they're going to bring somebody that they think is going to pass the interview. They don't want to bring in somebody who's going to fail the interview. That doesn't make them look good in their judgment and certainly is embarrassing to the guy to come in and fail the interview kind of thing. So, you know, we put this thing out, the interview. I'm a psychiatrist. This is what I do for a living is I interview people and I try to help determine, well, what is their competency in various things and what are their skills and what are their abilities? So they'd have to come and have the interview. I didn't like, you know, whenever I was young, whenever you went to pick up a girl, you went in and you went to the door to pick them up and you, you know, talked to the parents. They invited you in. Usually the girl wasn't ready yet. So it gave time for the parents to do a little bit of, you know, questions and just to get to know and just to sort of see, does he have his shirt tucked in or, you know, did he brush his teeth, you know, just some basics.
Attention to detail, like what you said.
A little bit of details. Well, whenever my girls were starting to date, people weren't even picking people up at the door. They would just, you know, drive, you know, up to the curb and the girl would expect it to just run out to the car. And I was like, that, you know, whenever I hear of that for other friends and, you know, their daughters, as you know, my kids were younger and not dating. I was like, well, that ain't happening for my girls. I mean, I'm not, you know, I want to know who's driving that car that my girl is leaving the house when it's dark to jump into and what the heck is going to happen there. Right. So they have to come in and have the interview before they go on any date. So in this interview, you know, they were usually a little nervous for the interview. It was just me and them one-on-one with that potential date. And I said, look, I'm just going to ask you a bunch of questions. Welcome them in. Hey, you're going to be coming into our house, impacting our family and our other daughters that we have. Yeah. So it's going to be great for us to get to know you and get to see you. You obviously have a strong interest in our daughter and she has feelings for you. That's why she's, you know, you're here on this interview because she's somebody, you know, you're somebody that she wants to date and you want to date her. So we're probably going to be seeing a lot of each other. So it's important for us to get to know each other, right? So me to get to know you, you get to know me and you get and interact with our family. So it's going to be really important. I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions to get to know you. It's going to be really important for you to be truthful with me. Truth is such an important aspect right now because nothing you tell me will disqualify you from dating my daughter. So nothing you divulge to me right now will disqualify you from dating my daughter.
Okay? Interesting.
I'm going to give you that. I'm going to give you that opportunity to date my daughter. I trust her ability to bring home a decent person. You're going to have an opportunity. We're going to get to know each other through the course of this discussion. But if you lie now, when you're given an opportunity, a free opportunity to be truthful with no consequences, it will be very hard for me to trust you in the future with anything that you're going to be doing with my daughter. So I need the truth out of you now, right? Without consequence, right? I'm going to extend grace to start with. You're going to start from a grace position. Then you're going to earn your way from there or lose your way from there based on what happens in your behaviors, in your conduct as you date my daughter. So I'm going to ask you a lot of questions. So I usually start off pretty simple in the process and, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself. And they usually start out logistically. Then I ask a little bit more about their personality. How would your friends describe you if they're having a trouble, you know, a little bit difficulty with nervousness or articulating a little bit more about their personality?
Yeah.
You know, what do you like to do? What do you like? What are your favorite foods, your favorite restaurants? vacations that you've been on.
So softballs. So,
yeah, softballs, exactly. Then we get a little deeper. Okay, you know, tell me about your goals. Tell me about school. How do you do in school? Do you like school? What do you do outside of school? Have you had a job? What jobs do you like? Yeah. If you don't have a job, are you interested in getting one? Do you see yourself picking one up in high school? To me, that would be an important thing. I mean, unless you're really involved with a whole bunch of different activities and extracurriculars and some skills that you have. But hey, I think working and making a little bit of money is an important thing to develop some of those responsibility skills.
Yeah.
Then I ask, well, what are your thoughts on dating? Have you ever been, you know, and get a little bit of that dating history to see, is it a healthy history? Is this their first time they've been able, you know, they've been dating somebody for whatever reasons? Have they had breakups? Have they been burned? Have they been hurt? Mm-hmm. You know, tell me a little bit about that process and get to see sort of what their transparency is, what their openness is, and, you know, what kind of emotional connection do they have to people? Is it casual? I date people once or twice and moved on to the next one once or twice. Or, well, I dated this person for a year and I was really hurt when we broke up. And yeah. Well, that's, you know, pretty significant element that they were able to have a commitment with somebody for a year. Might not have ended well. Maybe it was his fault. Maybe it was her fault or some combination. Or they just, you know, wasn't a match at that point and time to move on kind of thing. And right. I get to hear their explanation. Then I ask, have you ever been sexually active? What are your views of sex?
Yeah.
Looking back on your sexual activity, well, what are your present thoughts about what happened sexually? How special was your partner to you at that time? And how special are they now? Then I ask, well, have you ever drank alcohol or used drugs? Tell me about that. Well, tell me about your religious or spiritual background and thoughts.
And this is all the first interview, correct?
This is all the first interview.
I love that.
Yeah. And, you know, how do you handle money? Tell me about money. How do you value money? What do you do with your money? Do you save it? Do you spend it? Again, I'm a saver. You know, I think people that are savers, I sort of value a little bit higher kind of thing of that self-discipline, that self-control, a little bit delayed gratification, ability to make a plan and stick to it. Hey, I want to save for a bike. I want to save for a car. I want to save for my, car insurance that I got to pay. I want to save up to take a girl on a date. I want to, you know, save up for, you know, good speakers, you know, for my car back in our days, you know, things we used to save up for. And then what are your thoughts about my daughter? You know, tell me about my daughter, you know. And then I share my thoughts about God, Jesus, sex, dating, drugs, alcohol, living together. You know, I tell them a little bit about my history. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I had some depression, had some anxiety. I ended up in jail for aggravated assault that, in my past. Had, you know, struggled. So I'm not looking for a perfect person, you know, but I'm looking for somebody who's able to learn and wants to strive for something better. So that's why I tell them in the beginning, hey, you know, what you've done in the past and what you tell me is not going to disqualify you from dating my daughter.
Yeah.
So once we get all that information out there on the table, right, and, you know, I have a good sense of, you know, who they are. And I let them know that, hey, my daughter is precious to me. I love her so much. God has entrusted me and assigned me the job of teaching her how to enjoy his blessings, have fun, peace, joy, purpose, passion, identity, meaning, value. And I'll do this by protecting her, teaching her, encouraging, helping, and guiding her. Have fun with her, enjoy her company. I'm here to help teach her how to be a good, consistent, godly decision maker, because that's how she's going to have a flourishing, abundant life. I have to report to God regarding how I'm doing at this job and whether I'm messing up or not. Now, you are part of the team. So you now, as I, you know, my daughter cares for you, I'm sort of, we're on a team now. It was my job mainly to do that. Now, if you're going to come and date her, you're taking up some of these responsibilities to protect her, to teach her, to help her, to encourage her, to have fun with her, have joy with her, to help her explore herself and understand who she is and help her grow and help protect her from evil things outside, from you and your desires, and from her and her own desires. Because, you know, my daughter isn't perfect and she's going to want to make mistakes, but I'm going to trust you. I need to trust you that you're going to help her protect her from herself. Now, if we can be, if you want that, if you care for my daughter that much, that you want to see her have a joyful, happy life, and if we can be teammates, because it sounds like, you know, if you really care for her, you're going to want those things. I really want those things. That puts us on the same side. We can work together and have a lot of fun with each other, seeing our daughter grow and helping her and protecting her. We're going to get along great.
That is amazing.
If you don't want to be on that team, if you don't want to push for those goals, if those goals aren't your goals about who my daughter is and what you can help her become, and with as you help her do that, I'm going to help you do these things too. I'm going to speak into you. I want to help you achieve peace, joy, freedom, understand who you are, grow in the skills that you want to grow in so you can have an awesome, cool, abundant life, and you guys can have a great relationship together and have fun with our family and engage with our family and do fun things that our family does. I'd love to, for you to be on that team to help both my daughter and help you grow in those awesome, cool things. We can be a great team. But if you don't have those as goals, and if you don't want those goals for yourself, and if you aren't protecting my daughter, and if you're hurting my daughter, me and you are going to have a lot of problems. You're probably not going to go very far as dating my daughter, and we're going to have a lot of difficulties with each other.
Right. That is such a sobering conversation to have, especially on a first date when, you know, you're first interacting with the parent. But it also just really brings into perspective how important dating is. Thanks for listening to part one of our conversation with Dr. Benzio. Personally, for me, it was so fascinating going through these topics with him and hearing his perspective as a Christian and a psychiatrist. So part two of our conversation with Dr. Benzio will be out next week, and we'll be focusing more on how young women approach dating, what young men should do, and how marriage is intended for a man and a woman who are already complete in Christ. So until we meet again, let us firmly rely on the protection of divine providence, and thank you for listening. This is Self-Evident.